welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library. My name is Natalie, and I'm a children's librarian here at Syosset. And my guest today is...
Hi, I'm Susan Cousell. I am a synagogue librarian, a book buyer at Words Bookstore in Maplewood, New Jersey. And I am the author of The Passover Guest, illustrated by Sean Rubin and published by Neil Porter Books, Holiday House Books.
And today we are going to talk about Susan's book, The Passover Guest. And so the first question is, tell us about yourself. Tell us how you got here, how you became a children's author.
So it's an interesting story. Generally, there's a very definite path that you take to be an author where you write and write and write, and then you submit books to an agent, and then you finally get an offer from an agent, and then the agent submits books to an editor, and then finally an editor says yes, and then you get published, and that could take years and years. My version also took years and years, but went through a very different route in that I wrote and wrote and wrote for years and years, and then I happened to be talking to a friend of mine, and I was telling him about this book that I had written. And we had talked about another book in the past. And I said, hey, you know, I have this new book. And he said, tell me about it. And I told him about it. And at that moment, I realized I wasn't just talking to my friend. I was talking to one of the greatest picture book editors in the business, and Neil Porter. And in that moment, I realized that I better talk really great and tell the story really well. And I did. And he said he was intrigued, which was amazing. And I sent it to him. And I think maybe 3 years later, he said yes. And there was a lot more conversations in the 3 years. And then after Neil said yes, then I got an agent. And then an illustrator was selected. The whole experience from me starting to write it to the book in my hands was 10 years. So wow. It still took a really long time, but in a very different way. And I got really lucky and I ended up with the most extraordinary editor ever. So that was just the best.
That is amazing. Wow. So I have a question. What is the difference between a public librarian, an academic librarian, and a synagogue librarian?
Yeah, so I've been a public librarian. I'm currently a synagogue librarian. An academic librarian usually works at college or university, and they can be research librarians, or they can also specialize in a particular subject area. And they often work with undergraduate and graduate students. A public librarian, I was a children's public librarian, as you are, and I particularly specialized in early literacy, which I loved. I did story times for, you know, ages 0 through 5. I worked on all kinds of early literacy issues, and I spent a lot of time at the reference desk. I worked with puppets and crafts and all kinds of great things. So I really enjoyed being a public librarian. And when but as a synagogue librarian, it's completely different. So first, I will only see someone, you know, when I was at the public librarian, I might've only seen them like for a few minutes while I helped them at the reference desk. I can sit down and talk to a patron now for like up to an hour. It's very much a social work kind of job almost, where you really get to know the patron. I see them after maybe there was a death in the family or somebody's sick, or they really want to sit down and talk that through and pick out just the right book. I watch kids grow. So very much like a school librarian where you watch kids grow older, but not just up till 5th or 6th grade. I see them through high school and college. I see the kids the whole, like a much longer time period. I do kind of all the jobs. So I'm a school librarian when I work with Hebrew school and nursery school and camps. I work with our rabbis and our cantors. I work with all our adult programs. And then I also, I do all the parts of being a librarian. So I do cataloging, I do reference, I cover the books, I shelve the books. There's not a part of the books that I don't touch. I decide which books to buy. So it's a complete experience as a one-person show. And I love it. It's a very special job and unique. And if you're interested in finding out more about Jewish librarians, the Association of Jewish Libraries is a very dynamic organization, and I recommend them. And we do a lot of exciting things and have really cool programs and conferences, and they're a great place to find out more.
Wow, that's great. Do you have like old like Talmuds in there and like Torahs and, I don't know, Mishnahs and things like that?
Yeah, so I always say I have board books to Talmuds, and my patrons are, you know, 2 to 92. And yes, so I do. I have everything. I have, you know, contemporary middle grade fiction and, you know, adult fiction, but I also have Torahs and Talmuds and Mishnahs, and I have the Kabbalah. I have all of that, commentaries. I have all of that. I have a brand new Talmud that I've been buying over many years, the Koran Talmud by Rabbi Aidan Steinsaltz, which is really a beautiful, wonderful Talmud. And I'm very proud of that. It's quite a thing to buy. You know, it's funny, it's 7.5 years to read the Talmud. It took me 7.5 years to buy this Talmud. And I'm just so delighted and proud of it. And, but I also have enormous, over 200 cookbooks. You know, it's a very, there's a lot of variety in the library.
That's awesome. That is so cool that you get to like, look at all these different types of books.
The library, it's a small, it's what we call a special library. That's the official name of it. Special library. And I have over 5,000 books. But what's unique about my library is they're all Jewish. They all have Jewish content. So you can walk in and every book is Jewish, whether it is a board book, you know, or a YA novel. So that's fun to select all those books.
That's awesome. So going back to your awesome book, which we loved. So I read this book to my daughter at the Passover guest. I read it to my daughter, and then I told my sister about it, and my sister read it as well, and my sister loved it, and she's like, oh my God, it was beautiful in every way, shape, and form. So from the storylines to the illustrations, we thought, again, it was just wonderful and honestly important story to tell, not only because you're teaching of the holidays, the Jewish holiday, but also because of the history in which you are telling this story in. So that leads me to my question, which is, what inspired you to write this book from start to finish, like from the ideas to the illustrations? It was just such an incredible book.
Oh, wow. Well, I'm thrilled that you liked it and your daughter liked it and your sister liked it. I mean, that's such high praise. There were a lot of different components in this book, and they came from a lot of places. And the basic story came from, the father of Yiddish literature, Eyal Peretz, wrote this short story in the early 1900s called The Magician, Der Kunstmacher. And there's a version that Yuri Shelovitz, who's a Caldecott winning artist and a native Yiddish speaker, did. And I love this book. It was a picture book, and he translated it and condensed it. And my mom used to read it to me when I was 5 or 6, and I thought it was the greatest. And so I read it with her. And then about 20 years later, I found it again as an adult in a Jewish library. And I just remember sitting down on the floor and reading it again and said, oh, I just love this. Oh, I love it. And then over time, I kept thinking about this. I couldn't let this story go. And I was like, you know, but I don't love it all. I want to change this and I want to change this. And what about this? And could this happen? And so eventually I started to write my own version and it's in the public domain. And so I was able to play around with it. And I added a lot of things. So for example, in the original story, there is no child. It's a man and a woman. And I just, every time, you know, another big change, for example, is the rabbi. When they run to the rabbi's house, he's just sitting alone in his study, studying books. And I was like, this is the first night of Passover. Why is he doing that? So I really wanted him to be at a Seder. And I didn't want, and also at the end of the story, there was the man and the woman have the Seder alone. And to me, that's not what Passover is. Passover is about people and community and family. So I had the rabbi at his Seder, and then I invented all these people to come back to the house and have the Seder with the family. So there were little things that I kept adding. But in terms of when people talk to me about this book, they're really struck by the place and time, which is in Washington, D.C., and the Depression. And the original story was, you know, in the early 1900s in a Polish shtetl. So that was probably the biggest change I made. And this was really between me and my editor, where like on the first reading of it, Neil said, I think it should be during the Depression, because I said I didn't want it in the shtetl, because when you keep writing about Jews long ago and far away, you can't identify with them. And then people, particularly non-Jewish people, read books like that all the time. I mean, it's okay to have some, but if it's the status quo and all we're reading about is Jews from a long time ago, we don't think about Jews as being existing in the present. And I didn't want it to be in the shtetl. So he said, well, it should be during the Great Depression, because these Jews are very poor and we need to have a reason why. And I said, no, I don't want that. Like, the Depression is depressing and yeah. And so we went back and forth where I said, hey, how about the 20s? And he said, no, the Depression. And I said, how about this time period? And he said, no, the Depression. And finally I looked into the Depression and I said, yeah, it's pretty interesting. And I went back to him and I said, hey, Neil, how about the Depression? He said, hey, that's a great idea. That's perfect. And then we did sort of the same thing on Washington, D.C., where I'm from D.C. I've lived in D.C. my whole life. And there are no Jewish children's books about DC. This is the first one. And I think DC has this amazing community. And I wanted to show that and put it in a place that we don't usually see Jews. And we did the same thing where I said, Neil, how about DC? And he's like, no, I don't see it. I said, DC. He said, no, DC, no. Finally, he came to DC. I walked him around the 4-mile trip that you see the main character had taken the book. And he's like, ooh, DC, this is great. Let's do DC. So it was a compromise on both of those, but those two pillars end up being kind of really remarkable in the book, that they're unusual, that place and time. That was a really long answer to your question.
No, but it was also like just adding on to that, like just from the reader perspective, it was fun to like pick out landmarks that we all knew, you know, that's part of our American history. And that was like kind of fun to do. And it was like relatable. And I appreciated that. I liked it.
Well, that was a challenge too, is that when I took it out of the shtetl, you know, there was this town square, and where was the town square going to be? And I really wanted the Lincoln Memorial, because to me, all the action, you know, just there's always action there at the Lincoln Memorial. And when I took Neil there and I said, look, Neil, this is DC's town square. And he said, no, it's the nation's town square. And I went, ooh. So yeah, and then there's also another, so everybody recognizes kind of the Capitol and the White House and all that, but there's also the Sixth and I Synagogue, which is a major DC Jewish landmark. And I really wanted that in the book. So I'm glad that that's the synagogue you see there. And DC people, when they see that, they're like, oh, it's Sixth and I. And the other major thing I wanted in the book was the DC cherry blossoms, which are huge in Washington. And I'm glad that they also made it into the book.
So how old is that temple? Did it stand during the Depression?
It did. It was built in the early 1900s.
Wow.
And Lincoln Memorial was built in 1922. So being a librarian, I researched everything into the ground. So for example, you see the archives under construction. So the archives were actually under construction during the time period of this book. We found those pictures of the archives under construction in the archives. So.
Wow. That's yeah. So cool. Wow. So my next question is, So as I read this more and more, this book, your book, I was impressed on how you're able to incorporate Jewish terms like, you know, like rabbi and Eliyahu and synagogue and I don't know, like matzah and Passover terms. And, you know, I thought while reading this, like, this can't be easy throwing these terms, but also simultaneously doing an amazing job at explaining what they are and incorporating it in the story. And like, I feel like that can't be easy. So how did you do that? Like, take us through the process of writing this book, right? Because you have to include like both the secular terms and like the Jewish terms, but everyone has to understand it, you know?
You know, nobody's ever commented on that, but that was really hard. And I was lucky in that my editor is Jewish and he was helpful in being able to say, in one, in being familiar with the terms, and two, being able to kind of back away and say, wait, you have to explain this. And also just even in the art too, the illustrator was also Jewish, and it was great to have this team. I was really lucky. And, but like, I mean, we had a conversation, a lot, so many emails, I don't even want to get into it, about making the Herodzi lumpier. No, it's not lumpy enough. No, it has to be lumpier. No, wait, lumpier. Is this Herodzi lumpier? Can somebody show a picture of her? No, that's my Herodzi. No, that's your Herodzi. What kind of Herodzi? What do you put nuts in it? I mean, just is like, yeah. So, but on the words, yeah, that was like, okay, so here's a line. Muriel asked the four questions about Passover. She didn't ask the four questions, right? If we were just talking into a Jewish audience, it would have just said the four questions. The about Passover was added. And like all the children searched for the piece of hidden matzah, which was found just before midnight. It didn't say the afikoman, and which was found just before midnight. That, you know, as you know, you had to finish the Seder before midnight, but like that line told you that. Like that, this whole paragraph, I've just worked on so long to try to get it accessible to both a Jewish audience and a non-Jewish audience.
Done so well.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Muriel realized in all the excitement she had forgotten to open the door for Elijah. That actually line, so subtle, right? Because they did open the door for Elijah. It's on the front cover of the book. But she doesn't know that she did that. So like, yeah, so every word we talked about, every one of those words. And then we had a very long discussion that went on forever about, in the back of the book, there is a note that says about Passover, and a note on the Passover holiday. And I didn't want that note. Every book in my library has that note, a note on Passover, a note on Hanukkah, a note on Shavuot. I didn't want the note because there's no a note on Christmas, a note on Easter. And I wanted to exist without that. I wanted it to be a picture book that didn't need it. And we went back and forth, and my editor, and I didn't write it initially because I just wanted it to be a picture book. And my editor finally said, yes, but think of all the children you just left out who are now at the end of your book and are confused and don't know what just happened. You can't leave those kids out. That's not fair. We may want that, but we can't do it. And I wrote the note that I didn't want to do. And he was so right. He's always right. And the number of people who have said, I learned so much from that note. And thank you for putting it in. And now I know what Passover is. And I was like, oh, darn it. But he was right. He was right. So I'm glad I put it in. It was the right thing to do. But I wish I didn't have to. I mean, we're not explaining what Christmas is, right?
Right.
So I wish we could get to that point.
So is that a goal of yours in writing Jewish books, to get to that point where you don't have to explain, you know, what Passover is? Or
I mean, wouldn't it be great? It's in, like I said, it's in every book in my library. I would love to get to the point where we don't use italics for a Hebrew or Yiddish word. We did not here, which was great, because to me that others the word. Hey, look, this word is not acceptable. I want Jewish books to be like all other books.
Yeah.
Little Passover humor for you there. Yes, it's my, there are many ways in which Jewish books don't seem equal, in that, you know, we're not publishing the same kinds of books for Jewish books that we are in other, in mainstream books. And I would like to get to that point. So yes, this is one small way. But my editor is right that, I would have confused everybody, and I didn't want that.
Yeah, that's great. And like I said, you did such a good job explaining that.
Well, I appreciate that, because that was one of the hardest things ever. I mean, there were so many, there were close to 50 drafts on this book, and there were so much trying to, every time I read that part, I'm like, oh my gosh, that actually worked, of like explaining what matzah was, or, you know, that was really challenging, because there, as you said, there's a lot of Jewish terms in this book, and you're trying to reach all audiences.
Yeah. So like, which part was your favorite to write? I mean, I know the most challenging, as you said it, but.
What was my favorite to write? There were a few parts. I'll say that my favorite line is the last one. And the funny thing is, I don't remember it. So the last line is, now she knew who the mysterious stranger was. If there were 50 drafts, there were 50 versions of that line.
Wait, that's my favorite part. I was going to tell you that. That's my favorite line. And then the cup says Eliyahu in Hebrew. I loved it.
Oh my gosh, the cup in Hebrew. So the Hebrew was wrong, and we had to change the Hebrew, and it was a whole, but the cup is right now, thankfully. Anyway, I'm very grateful the cup is right. Like, every person we showed the book to said, you know, the cup is wrong, right? And we're like, yes, we know. We'll change it. Don't worry. This is my favorite now. And it wasn't like this in the original, quite this way. And I invented this thing with the cup. I invented the penny too. But I invented the cup. They just say, hey, by the way, everyone knows it's Elijah, right? Or something a little more refined than that. But I wanted it to be the cup, because if Elijah was really at your Seder, he's going to drink the wine from your cup, right? I mean, isn't that the whole point? You're going to notice that there's no wine left in your cup. And that was why I was always attracted to this story, where this was a couple that actually had Passover with Elijah. I mean, that's amazing. And, but we changed that line 50 times. I could not get that line right. And on every time my editor looked at it, he's like, that line, And so I was glad to get that line finally right. And then the illustrator added the penny, gives back the penny at the end, and because he doesn't need it. And that she put in the hat, and I just love that. So yeah. And I also love reading it now, because I have a lot of kids who will react to it, and particularly when I speak at Jewish day schools, then they all react.
Yeah. So why did you decide to have like Elijah written in Hebrew on the cup instead of in English?
Oh, well, I mean, I think that's the way Elijah would want it. And most, I find that most Elijah cups are written in Hebrew. I mean, I know mine is. And I don't know if I've seen Elijah written in English. Have you?
I mean, in books, but not on a Kiddush cup.
Not on a Kiddush cup. So to me, it's more of the standard to see that. Yeah. And I like it in Hebrew better.
Yeah.
I think he'd want to see that.
There was also a nice like teaching moment. Like I read and speak Hebrew. So I read it as if it was like English. I'm like, wait, that's Hebrew. And then like, I kind of like showed my daughter like Aleph, like how do you spell Aliyah? Like Lamed, hey, you know, hey. It was a nice teachable moment as well.
Oh, I'm so glad. Like I said, we agonized over that particular Hebrew more than anything else. So I'm very happy that that you had a nice moment with it.
Yeah. So how do you celebrate Passover? Like, are there any traditions that you guys do with your family?
So Passover is my favorite holiday, and it always has been. And we do a custom that's very silly. My favorite custom is, it's actually a Persian custom, but I found out about it many years ago, and I just, we love it. And now everybody remembers it from Passover, where you take a scallion and you give everybody at your table a scallion. And during Dayenu, every time you say the word Dayenu, you hit the person next to you with a scallion, Dayenu, but only on the word Dayenu. And you end up with a lot of broken onions, but it's really, it's memorable. But like I said, it's a Persian custom, and it's super, super fun, and makes Dayenu a lot more exciting. And then we have to add in extra Dayenu verses, because nobody is quite done hitting their neighbor. You have to also pick who you're going to sit next to very carefully.
That's so funny. We just screamed Dayenu really loud.
Oh, you can do that, but try the onions. You'd be surprised.
No, I'm definitely going to try that this year.
Yes. Scallions, not leeks, unless you really have something against the person sitting next to you.
I will try that. Are you going to write more Jewish books in the future?
Yes. So as a synagogue librarian, and then I was also on the Sydney Taylor Book Award Committee for many years, and I was the chair of the committee, and I've just seen, I see all the Jewish books, and there are many that I admire, and I also see the holes of where I'd like to see more books. And I'm just kind of very aware of the Jewish children's landscape, I think more than most people might be. Because and then I'm also have this other job I mentioned as a book buyer, which means that I see for a bookstore, which means I see the entire children's landscape, every book, every season, and what's for sale and what's being produced. And I see literally where the Jewish books are missing in a way that I don't think everyone sees. And because of all that, I've really made a commitment to write almost entirely Jewish books. So right now I'm working on 4 in different genres and age levels, and hopefully one will come out one day. But that's a commitment that I've personally made, because not that I'll meet all those holes, and I feel that many, many people are meeting them, and I am very much a cheerleader for other writers and illustrators in the industry, but just that I feel it's important to put my money where my mouth is. And if I am advocating for more Jewish books, then I also need to be writing in. But really, they're just holes in general. Like, there are no, almost no, I mean, in every category, there's like a couple of books. But in the comparable categories in the mainstream publishing, there are hundreds and hundreds. So there's, you know, pretty much we don't have much like on the Magic Treehouse level, Captain Underpants kind of thing. Like those kind of things, there are dozens and dozens of those in the mainstream world, but not in the Jewish world. We don't have early readers, kind of like Elephant and Piggy. Well, you know, Piggy's a little trafe, so we don't have Piggy, but you know, we don't have early readers. We don't have early chapter books. We have very little mystery and fantasy and sci-fi, and basically very few graphic novels. essentially everything that every kid asks for, we don't really have.
For, you know, when you write these Jewish books, you want everyone engaged and like involved. And I mean, that must, like, is that challenging to like get everyone reading, like every different type of people reading Jewish books or just reading a specific type of book? Like, how do you engage and encourage?
It's very challenging. It's very disheartening. You know, you'll be told, you know, you'll be told that a school doesn't want you because your book is religious. My book's not really religious, but they'll take Christmas books. You know, we get told a lot that, you know, a book is in a bookstore, it'll be stuck in the religion section, not in the picture book section. Nobody will find it in the religion section. You know, Jewish authors are not considered diverse. They're not invited to speak on diversity panels or, you know, for diversity scholarships or things like that. You don't see Jewish books, with a few exceptions, on diverse book lists. So it is hard to get for people to accept that Jewish books are diverse books or are just books that are not in this tiny world that only Jewish kids can read. Everybody can read them. The problem is not the books. The problem is often the mindset. I don't think there's any problem reading my book. There's nothing in my book that is bad or coercive or something that, you know, anyone can read. But the problem is convincing people that it's just a regular picture book. And as you said, you know, I went out of my way to explain it to someone who isn't Jewish. Very deliberately and purposely. And in every time we did that, you know, a word like matzah came up, we thought about both how would a Jewish kid think about this word and how would a non-Jewish kid think about this word, to make sure it was accessible for both groups.
Yeah, you do a good job of doing that. Is that you? Well, my question was, what's your favorite holiday? But you answered it. It's back over. What's your favorite holiday?
Second favorite holiday. You know, I like Sukkot. It's a really nice kind of chill holiday, right? You're outside, you're relaxed, it goes on for a while. It's just a nice nature. You shake your lulav, your etrog. I like Sukkot. It's a nice holiday. You know, there's aspects I like of Purim, but Purim I find to be a little frantic. And sometimes it becomes a little overwhelming for me, but also Simchat Torah. But Sukkot, I can like sit down and relax. I don't know. So, okay. How about you? Do you have a favorite holiday?
I like Purim. I do.
There's a lot of fun parts of Purim.
I mean, just the superficial part of dressing up. I, I like Rosh Hashanah.
Oh, you know, I do like Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah has a very, and I love, we do a lovely dinner and it's just a nice, it's just a nice feeling of new beginnings. I you know, I make my nice round challahs and, you know.
Yeah. I like and for, yeah. And for those who don't know what Rosh Hashanah is our Jewish New Year. And do you want to explain what Sukkot is?
Yeah, Sukkot is the festival of booths, which means that we built a temporary shelter, usually in your backyard or your synagogue, and you're supposed to eat or sleep out for 8 days. And I just find it to be relaxing. So Purim is a big sort of, my best word for it is the party holiday. And we dress up and we do this big Purim spiel, which is a silly play, and there's always a big carnival, and so there's a lot going on. But yeah, there's a to me, the Jewish year is just full of some wonderful things. And truly, I guess my favorite holiday is really Shabbat, which is once a week. And it's just, it's a moment for peace. There are moments of peace on the Jewish calendar and acknowledgments that we all need to rest and recover. And I like that sentiment.
I love Shabbat. Yeah, we do it every Friday. It's definitely a nice time to just recharge. And I love like teaching my daughter like the, you know, the hamotzi, the prayers for the challah and the wine. And yeah. So thank you so much, Susan, for coming on our podcast. It means so much to all of us. And this was just awesome. This was an awesome conversation and it was a pleasure. And we are going to close this chapter of Turn the Page.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.